Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of age group triathletes. We'll be looking at the real world challenges of being an amateur multi-sport athlete. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How you doing on this snow day, Brian?
I am awesome, because everything is awesome. You ever saw a Lego movie?
No. Sorry. Missed that one.
Everything's awesome when you're part
really,
of a team.
Really good, but no, I have not.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. That's the song from the Lego movie.
Okay. I believe you. So you're awesome. Well, that's good. You enjoying the snow?
Okay, before we get any more copyrights, that's all I can pull.
So glad you found that little tidbit for us.
We've gotten some snow. We went snow riding. It was good. It was good, fun stuff.
Hiking up and down hills.
Yeah. No, we took off and Jenny got out. We had a toboggan sled that was for like 4 or 5 people, a real long one.
I saw that in your driveway and it was like, oh my God, I had one of those when I was kids. Ours, you were supposed to put 6, but we usually made it to like stuff. Keep
it pulling. It was pretty heavy.
Yeah, they are heavy.
We dragged that one out. We also had a snow tube to go. I was carrying the snow tube. Jenny was kind of pulling that and carrying that. And I'm like, we get down to the end of the driveway and we've got probably another half a mile to go. I'm like, let's just leave that. We got this tube. It'll be fun. Everything's great. It's easy to carry. We'll get over there with this. 2 times down, it had gotten a hole and immediately went flat. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. We just got here. I ended up volunteering to go back and get the other sled. Took that, the deflated one, kind of mix of jog and walk back. It's kind of hard to run in the snow.
Snow and big boots.
And boots. Kind of a mix of jog, get back, swap them out. Fortunately, I didn't have to go all the way back to the house. I only had to just get down to the hill that goes down to our house. Took that back. Then we had a lot of fun using that, although Alex, after a while, didn't want to be up front because it kicks up all the loose snow in your face. He didn't care for that too much. Eventually, Jenny ended up front, and Alex ended up in the middle, and I was in the back. It was good. We learned slowly that you want to put all your weight on the back of the sled and not the front of the sled if you want to go further.
Yep, exactly.
I assume it has to do with something with how the front interacts with the snow.
Well, it lifts the front up a little bit, so you're not plowing.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. It interacted with the snow better.
Skiing over it, yeah.
We went a little bit further. So we went over to the park and did that for a couple hours. That was a lot of fun. Of course, then we had to walk back. We didn't really want to try to get the car out for that. That was... Our driveway is a little too long to shovel. We just let the snow be.
I'm really surprised you don't have a tractor. Well, I mean, it's so infrequent that we get this much snow.
It's one of those things, if I really cared, I would have just gone down and shoveled the steep end part of our driveway. That was really the only hard part of getting in and getting out, is that steep end part. It's not very long. It's what, 15 yard hill or something?
You could have handled shoveling that, just saying.
Do what?
I said you could have handled shoveling that.
I could have, but that would have involved me like skipping dad school, going down there and shoveling and coming back. And then the labor involved in that is just not much fun. I hated shoveling as a kid.
It's not a whole lot of fun, no.
No. At least it would have been all downhill, that's true. I could have just shoveled it down into the street.
There you go. Then let the plow get it.
Let the snow plow get it.
Well, I had a whole lot of fun. I put something on Facebook. I can't remember what I said, but somebody said, oh, you need to be skiing. And I was like, if I had cross-country skis, I wouldn't come inside all day. And a friend that had commented, you should be skiing, then called me about 2 hours later and said, hey, Linda, I have some cross-country skis. Do you want to borrow them for the next couple of days? I got to go to work. It's so unusual for us to actually have enough snow to cross-country ski. I mean, you've got to have 2 or 3 inches, you know, I mean, or more. Usually we get, you know, what, half an inch, and it's gone in a day. And it's, you know, who's going to spend the money on having those skis around that you get to use every 5 years? So I was like, sign me up. I'll be over there in an hour. Pick them up. The shoes are a little bit too small. They've made a lot of changes, too. I mean, it used to be all real, really good cross-country skis. You got to wax them. It's almost like a surfboard kind of thing.
Right.
But I remember having waxless skis when I was a kid, and that's what these were. So it's like, okay, that's simple. I don't have to do anything to the bottoms of these things. The boots are very different. They used to be shoes. Now they're actually boots. Somebody got smart and figured out people didn't want snow in their shoes. There used to be all different kinds of ways to clamp into the skis. They don't have that anymore. It's like, pop it in. It's one little bar that pops in, pops out. Okay, this is awesome. My dog, Hutch, is apparently not very brave, and he did not know what the hell I was doing and went and hid. I figured, oh, Hutch will come with me all over the farm. He was like, no, you're moving differently. I don't know what this is. I'm going to go hide.
I don't want any part of it, yeah.
He's like, something's not right. So he did not come with me, but it's hard work. My fingers got so, so cold, and I figured out it was, number one, it was only 7 degrees, but, and wearing gloves, but also just holding onto the poles so tight and just clenching, you know, and holding on so tight for so long. And I was like, okay, got to learn how to relax. But went again today, and now that I have the trails done, I mean, you go someplace like New Hampshire, they actually have a machine that grooms all the trails and makes the tracks. And I mean, you pay to go to nicely groomed places. Yeah, my farm's not like that.
No. That's why I was kind of wondering, like, you're going cross-country skiing? Is there any places that would be anywhere fun? Because I would imagine that just the long grass and stuff like that would cause problems skiing over.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost like snowshoeing for a bunch. But once I got the tracks done, like today, it was so much better. Because I back onto those tracks. And there's still quite a few bumps and stuff with the grass. I tried to go around the edge of the farm, and there's a few, you know, pretty good spots. The yard was great. The driveway was awesome. And our driveway is a tenth of a mile, so just kind of scooting back. But hitting a little more ice, though, when I was on the driveway than I did out in the fields.
Yeah, the snow had this, like, ice base where it sleeted for about an hour or two. There was, like, an inch of ice, and then the snow came and covered the ice.
Yeah, that crazy. Sleet, I was like, oh, no, when that was coming down. I would have much preferred that all to be snow. It was what it was. So it was great exercise. The Phoenix 5S actually has a cross-country ski.
That's right.
Favorite thing. So I threw that on the watch. I was like, woohoo. All excited.
It's a good time to do it. There's not much else you can do in this cold. Can't go biking. Can't really run.
I don't mind running in this. I've run a couple times. Not since we got all of the snow, but I did go Saturday, and I think I went Monday as well. And I just don't mind it that much. I mean, I mind the ice. That's scary.
I guess it depends on where you can run where there's no snow, but running through the snow is not a lot of fun.
No. I run downtown where I can be on the roads, and I try and get out before the cars are out and just stay on the roads. But I just don't mind it being cold. That's not a problem.
It has been cold, too. It was burr. Today's been burr. Yesterday was really a burr.
Yeah.
That's okay. Teens are part of it. I don't understand why February always feels like the coldest month, although technically it's not. January is the, on average, is the colder month. But for whatever reason, February just gets brutal in Kentucky.
I don't know. I mean, it is this year.
The wild swings. January is more consistently cold than February. February tends to have swings.
Right.
On the back end of the winter months, you get a lot more snow, you get a lot more really Arctic,
you really,
cold weather.
Have you looked at the forecast for next week? We got the 50s coming.
Coming back.
Like by the end of the week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just bizarre to me. You know, Monday it's going to be in the 40s and rain. Awesome.
Well, it usually doesn't get this cold. We usually don't get these big Arctic swoops down like we've had.
Well, and they don't stay like this. You know, that's the other thing, too, is this has stayed for a couple weeks now. Pretty cold.
Yeah, the last big snow we had, we got stuck down in Alabama and came back, and there was still a foot of snow like a week later.
Oh, wow.
That was back when we had an exchange student.
Oh, wow.
That poor, she's from Mexico, and it was hilarious. She's like, we might actually get some snow this year. You can get to see snow because Mexico doesn't get a ton of snow. They have some in their mountainous areas, but generally not a lot of snow. That was the year it snowed. We had 9, 10, 12-inch snowfalls that year. She was so sick of the snow and cold by the time she left.
She's very happy to go back to Mexico.
This is not normal at all. I remember that. That was wild. Because I remember coming back and we couldn't get in our driveway. It was 8 or 9 inches deep. We couldn't get the car down and down the little hill next to our house. It was wild. That was crazy. The other thing that happened this week is I saw a bald eagle.
Really?
I did. I saw a bald eagle flying over downtown, along the river here.
Are you kidding?
Frankfurt. No.
Wow. That's amazing.
I went and said something to Alex and Jenny, and it was gone. It must have been out hunting. I don't think it's like lodged around here. I haven't seen it since.
So surprising, because we've got so many buzzards. I mean, I guess they don't, I don't know. I just don't know enough about them. It just seems to be very populated with birds in the downtown of Charlotte.
We have hawks around here.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't seen a ton of hawks recently. I think it's somewhere along the river. Who knows where? And it just happened to be out hunting, and I happened to have seen it. Because I'm pretty sure the eagles hunt over a pretty large area.
Yeah, pretty sure. I don't know that much about them. I know we have a few around here, but that's awesome.
Yeah, so I saw a bald eagle. I'm like, that's wild. At first, I thought it was a buzzard, and I'm like, wait, why is the head white? Why are the tail white? That's a bald eagle. That's crazy.
Wow, that's so cool.
That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Aw, I like that. Pretty cool.
Let's see, what else did I come across? I also came across this is kind of off topic a little bit, but I was reading about, I guess, Nick Saban, the head coach for Alabama.
Okay. Like
the winningest college football coach of all time, as far as championships.
Every once in a while.
He's pretty much awesome and everything, but they were talking about how you can't let problems cause other problems in your life. A lot of people would be like, I don't really feel like getting up today. I don't feel like doing anything. And you don't. And by not doing something, you create problems because you put things off that shouldn't have been put off and things like that.
Okay.
And Nick Saban had a great quote about that. He was like, it's kind of like my dad used to tell me when I used to go to work at the station. My girlfriend broke up with me, so I was treating the customers bad. He said, what's wrong with you today, son? He said, well, my girlfriend broke up with me. And he said, well, you've got one problem. But if you keep treating the customers bad, you're going to have two more. One, I'm going to fire you. And two, then I'm going to whip your ass for getting fired.
There you go.
Although that was a good story. So I wanted to bring that one out. It's a good life lesson, too.
Yeah.
You can't let one problem create other fires, whether it be not getting enough sleep and, hey, I'm tired. I don't feel like working on this. I don't feel like doing this. Well, all you're doing is putting that off, and it's going to cause problems somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool quote. That one made me laugh.
We've talked about procrastination before. That plays into that for sure.
Oh, yeah. I just thought that was an interesting article of... Yeah, you can't let an unfortunate event create neglect in other areas, because all that's just going to do is create other areas of problems.
Just as a teacher, the kids feed off of your energy. They really do. And it's like, if you're having a bad day, guess what? Everybody's going to have a bad day. You've got to turn it around. You've got to leave it at home. Otherwise, holy cow, you're in for it. It just all snowballs. I've seen it happen. I've done it myself. I'm like, why is everybody being horrible? Maybe that's me. Okay. Let's back up. Let's regroup. Let's read a fun story, get everybody in a different mindset, and turn the day. It works.
The other thing I saw in the news this week that was kind of interesting, I guess it was 2 weeks ago. I meant to talk about it last week. I didn't get a chance. The UCI has decided that they're going to enforce some of their rules that they've never really enforced before.
Okay.
It affects how you sit on the bike. They're getting rid of the super tuck.
No.
As a legal UCI biking maneuver. Really? I guess they felt it was too dangerous. Because you're not allowed to ride on the top tube of your bike. That's part of the rules. The other one that's interesting that's going to affect them is you cannot ride your road bike like a TT bike. You can't put your arms on the handlebars. You can't put your forearms on the handlebars. A lot of them will do that in breakaways.
Okay.
Generally, when you're riding a TT bike, you usually have armrests there.
Right.
Well, the pro riders...
I'm sitting here going, my road bike's got aero bars on it.
But if your road bike doesn't have aero bars, which they don't, they're pro riders.
Right.
They'll still get down in that tuck position and just ride with their forearms on the handlebars.
On the handlebars, yeah.
That's the other one that's going to go away, which is going to make racing slower, interestingly enough. I assume it'll make it safer. It will really... get rid of some of the excitement of descents. Some of the really cool aspects of the Tour de France was when Philippe would get on front, get in that super tuck, and just be gone.
Yeah.
And people having difficulty catching up with him. The other riders couldn't catch up with him because they couldn't sit in those tucks. They couldn't corner at those speeds. Now, by slowing the faster guys down, it makes the weaker riders able to hang on a little bit easier. I don't know how interesting some of these cool descents that the Tour has had these last couple of years are going to still be around.
So have there been wrecks recently with riders doing that? Is that why they've decided to enforce it?
Maybe. Or people are kind of, I think there's this worry that the general population is going to start doing this more and more of these types of moves because they follow the pros and they don't want to.
You do. Like,
I know I do. It's great. It's a great way to go fast on a bike. So I don't really understand it. I assume it's for rider safety.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, it really penalizes the descenders.
Yeah.
I assume they can still, you're still going to be able to make some gains because you can corner faster than the other guys. That gap just won't be as big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone like Philippe can't pull away by a couple hundred yards on a descent. He might just be able to get like 100 yards instead of 200 or 300.
Yeah.
Because he won't be able to go as fast between those corners that he so excels at taking at really, really high speeds. I thought that was an interesting news story. I'm curious to see how that affects racing this next season when the tour and those things come around that I actually watch.
Yeah.
One of the more exciting elements of the last couple of tours has been the descending and Philippe on front. It's just crazy to watch these guys just fly down a hill at 70 miles an hour on their top tubes, 60 miles an hour on their top tubes.
Oh my God, that's so insane. Absolutely terrifying to think about.
Oh yeah, God. It's crazy. No, they can really haul butt on those on their bikes, and it's amazing to watch. There's no doubt about that.
That's just, yeah. I mean, I have just last year started being able to get on the top tube, but I just can't get my body position in the right place for the arms. I can't have my arm. I can either have my hands on top close, or I can have my body on the bar, but I've got to have my hands down on the horns. I can't do that.
There's definitely a learning curve to sitting on your top tube.
Yeah.
It took me a while. What I generally did was use it on the smaller hills where I could just get used to the balance of it and just practice that for a while until I got more and more comfortable. And then I started applying it to bigger and bigger hills to the point now where I can go down our biggest hills around here sitting on my top tube doing 50 miles an hour.
I mean, I'm very comfortable now with my hands close. On the front and not being on the brakes.
That's the first start.
Not a problem, and I can get tucked down, but I can't get all the way on that top tube. I just, my body's going, no, you don't fit.
It's easier for me on my road bike than my aero road bike.
Okay.
The frame slopes down a little bit. It's easier for me to tuck in underneath the saddle on my road bike than it is on my aero road bike.
I haven't tried it on the
but road. I can still do it on my aero road bike. I've done it in races. That's what we did in last time I raced, I guess the last race I did was the Bowling Green race.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yep.
They have a huge downhill and I'm
nice downhill.
Right on it, flying fast as I can down that hill.
Shoot.
It's good times. Good times.
So how's your weight loss doing with all this?
I have
stuck at home.
Pretty much leveled out right around that 158 mark. Ready to make that next drop into the 157 range and the 156. I need to get down to 156 before the end of February, which is probably unlikely.
I've been going up and down. I finally think I've got the hang of the MacroStacks app. I mean, so many of the different apps, you know, you log your food. With MacroStacks, you're planning it out. And I've never done that to this degree before. And it seems to be working. I've dropped about 2.5 pounds. It's kind of going up and, you know, a half pound up and down here and there. But it's actually working. Tons and tons of protein. My God. All right. I had no idea that I needed that much protein. Figuring out how to get it and not get fat, you know, have the fat at the same time. It's like, all right, what foods are there? Shrimp is a good one. Tuna fish. Pretty much any of the fish. Salmon's got a lot. Lots of chicken, lots of tuna fish in my diet realm. But it's interesting to see and to try to work it out.
There's a lot of Five Guys burgers in my diet over the weekend. We did a trip up to, we went to Lexington. We were going up to Cincinnati and the weather was getting bad. We're like, well, let's just go up to Lexington and get a hotel room for a night, have some fun. We ended up at Five Guys for dinner. So good.
Never
so many
there.
Calories.
Apparently.
They have pretty good burgers and they have just really great fries though. They have big bags of potatoes out in their entry, their lobby area where you order that they use to
hand make them.
Yeah, they're a chain. But they hand make their French fries right there at their stores, which makes for really good French fries. Alex approved. That was always good. We'll be able to go back there again.
Yay, thank goodness.
Yeah, we got to go swimming in the pool. That was the afternoon after the hour swim, I really did not want to get to the pool, but I did. A sacrifice.
You brought your son to a pool. You're going to get in the pool.
Yes, and it was cold, too. It was probably 78 degrees.
Jenny was saying, like, the pool itself was warm, but the air around...
It was blowing in warm water. The air was just so cold, it just sucking the temperature out of that pool. Ugh. Left and right. It just was not warm.
And you didn't bring a wetsuit, of course.
No, it was definitely cold. It was... My son had fun.
That's all that's important.
I was shivering pretty hard that first day, though. Second day, I did a little better, but I wasn't in as long. We were only in about a half hour that second day. The first day, we were in about an hour. It was a little challenging towards the end of that hour to stay warm.
Don't you want
to
get out, Alex?
No, I didn't want to get out.
So the hour swim, the annual hour swim for
the
United States.
Annual hour swim, the plague of my existence.
You just enjoy it so much, you know.
The funny thing is, I don't have any races that are that long. If I were an Ironman triathlete, I'd probably enjoy that event a lot more. Mm-hmm. I swam 3,700 yards plus 3,725 yards this time, just under, right around 2 miles. It was under the 2.4, because 2.4 miles is 4,000 yards.
Okay.
Full Ironman or full distance triathlon. My longest swim is 1,650 yards in a race.
Yeah.
It's double what I do in a race. Makes me not really want to get too excited about this type of event. It's difficult to swim that far in a pool, that long in a pool, without getting bored. It really is. It's always great because the first 10 minutes take forever. You keep looking up. It's like, oh my God, I've still got 50 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And then I got 40 minutes to go. Then it was like, oh my God, I got 30 minutes to go. Then you have this like little gap from between 30 minutes to go and about 7 or 8 minutes to go where it's all good. You're just swimming. At this point, you're just swimming. It's going to take its time. And you get to that last 5 minutes. It's like, oh my God, I've swam like 7,000 yards and that 5 minutes isn't gone.
It's definitely a painful event.
It's very long. I'm just not used to swimming that. This time I went out probably a little fast. Not too bad. I went out a little fast. I struggled towards the end. I was really fighting a calf cramp the last about 400 or 500 yards. One was coming. I'd have to relax. I did a lot of open turns to make breathing easier and make the push off easier. There were a lot of things I did to kind of mitigate the cramping. I was definitely struggling that last probably 400 or 500 yards. It showed up my time. I was 1 or 2 seconds slower per 50 in those last 100 yards. You did it, didn't you? How'd you
do? I did. Yep. I probably had the least amount of yards of anybody on our team. I got 2,700, which...
Who was there? I'm trying to think of who else was there.
The only other person that would have had less than me was Mike, and that's because he left her.
Oh. A lot of the people who are... My slower swimmers didn't show up for this.
They did not show up.
It was mostly the...
It was all of the faster folks, yeah.
It was most of the faster folks.
Yeah. I was definitely...
Except for one guy. Who was our oldest swimmer?
Oh, yeah. I don't know what he did. I may have been close to him.
He has a tendency to get faster as he goes, though. It takes him about 30-40 minutes to...
I probably had less than him, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm proud of my effort. I started cramping like crazy, too. And I stopped a bunch, and I got yelled at a bunch.
I'm not yelling. I'm motivating.
Yeah, it's so much fun when you have, you know, people staring at you while you swim. And there's a lot of them. And, you know, you got the timer, and then you get Brian walking back and forth.
Well, they had too many timers for the first time, so I got to just kind of walk back and forth and chat with the different timers and watch strokes and make comments about people's technique.
You haven't seen me swim in months.
And you're still crossing
and
over.
And I still cross over. Yeah. I know these things. I'm working on it.
Work harder.
I had Mimi yelling at me, too.
So. See, everybody else saw it, too. It wasn't just
me. I know.
It was good, though. It's just such a long swim.
It is long. I mean, I took several breaks. I probably stopped. Well, as time went on, I stopped more. But not for very long. Just get a drink of water. My legs were cramping. I changed strokes all the time, too. Okay, 75 freestyle, 25 or something else.
Okay.
You know, I was trying to do that just to make things different. Plus, my breaststroke's not that slow, so
not
too bad.
I pretty much rolled the freestyle. I got stuck between two people who are roughly my speed, which is really painful. You don't want to get beat by them. the hyper competitive in me. I got out in front. I'm like, now it's like the last like 20 minutes was like, okay, I just got to hold on to this. I can swim further than everybody around me.
Please, towards the end,
it became a struggle because the one gentleman next to me, he was holding his on when I was starting to fail towards the end. I was worried about my cramps, just trying to hold on at the end. He started gaining ground on me, but in these things, you can't really gain a lot of ground very quickly.
Well, your whole group that swam, I mean, was all of our top swimmers.
That's true. The faster swimmers went second, which is really annoying to me. Yeah. I'd much rather swim with the slower people. I don't want to be with people that are roughly my speed.
Just sign up when you sign up next time.
It had nothing to do with that. Mimi was putting all the faster swimmers in the second group.
I thought she'd went by who could swim when.
I don't think so.
Because, well, initially I wasn't going to be able to stay. And then
I think she probably asked who could swim when.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, we'll just put all the fast people together. Yay. Allows her somebody to pace off of, I guess.
Yeah.
It was good times. It was... The worst part about it is you go from year to year and you have the same damn swim distances. It's not like you're gaining any great ground or whatever. I feel like I'm swimming faster now than I've swam before, but according to like the hour swim, no, I'm not.
Well, maybe you need to look at what did you do, at...
Yeah, and I did.
30 minutes.
I did look at where I was in the first like 1500. And I was probably 20, 30 seconds faster than my best time.
Yeah.
I am swimming faster. I wasn't able to hold on this time like I did before. But even so, even if I had been able to hold on to my time and not faded in the last 400 or 500 yards, I would have been maybe 50 yards further. You go from year to year. Well, I did 10, 15 yards further than the previous year. That doesn't really help the motivation and like, hey, let's do the hour swim so I can crush my previous year. No.
Yeah.
I can go back and swim the same time or less. The funny thing was, I think my fastest time was the first year I did it, 2014. No, it was the same. I did about the same distance.
Yeah.
2015.
2015, it looks like you got the most, well, the same distance that
same
you did
distance
this year.
Same distance I did now. So 4 year, five year difference, and it's the same distance. Yeah. Needless to say, the Irish swim is not one of my favorite events.
I think I need to find my sheets because I need to dig them up. I'm pretty sure this is the furthest I've gone. I want to say I did like 2,500 a couple of years ago. So I did make some big gains. I mean, I had no endurance when I first started and I stunk at it. So
that's what I told myself. I'm like, I finished 37.25. Oh man, I probably did 35. I probably did 200-300 yards further than the previous year.
And you go back and look. You'd be like me and you lose the paper so you can make up whatever you want.
Oh damn. No, it's the same. Or it's less. And you're like, okay, I give up. Part of it is I'm just not trained for that type of distance, which is why I faded at the end. I generally don't swim more than 2,500 yards in any one given practice, and here I am doing 50% more.
Well, a lot of your team recently, too, I noticed, they'll do the practice, and then they'll just stay and they'll swim for the second practice. And so,
I don't swim as far as the team does. The team generally swims further than me, mainly because I'm swimming afterwards.
Yeah, it's wild. How many? I mean, I look at Strava and I'm like, oh my God, look how many yards that person did. Holy cow.
If you haven't done the hour swim, try it once. Then you can come back and we can compare notes on how painful it is. It got so bad the 1 year, that's when I decided to do the 400 IMs.
That's what you did last year. Well, 2019.
Just how many 400 IMs can I do in an hour? Turns out that number's 8. When I got done, there was maybe like 30 seconds left in the hour. I'm like, cool, I got 8 in. Because when I went into it, I thought I could get 7. I got 8 done. I'm like, huh, I never have to do this again because there's no way I'm doing 9.
I wonder.
100 fly that many times in a row is hard on my shoulder.
Yeah. Oh, oof. I'm lucky to get a 25 fly. I'm so glad I can actually get across the pool 45. I did one today.
It's been a while since I've done a 400 IM. I used to do them as part of my warm up.
Yeah. I knew you did IMs for warm up. Thank God you don't make us do that.
Well, I had some shoulder issues that have kept me away from the fly until I can kind of strengthen that up a little bit better and get a little bit better and try to get back to doing some more 400 IMs.
Don't try and do the hour swim at all fly. I can see doing the hour swim like all backstroke or something.
You can do the hour swim with the other strokes without too much trouble. Fly would be a little challenging. You'd have a hard time. Shoulder wouldn't be very happy with
that. Yeah,
it
would be tough. I could see doing backstroke for the whole thing, or at least half of it. Breaststroke would be out.
You would just go into some modified breaststroke.
Yeah.
where you would just kind of glide through a lot of it. Yeah. The kick would be challenging to do that much brushstroke kick, mainly because I don't do a lot of out-of-plane stuff. If I do a lot of brushstroke kick, I'll feel it in the knees.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. That wouldn't bother me at all.
You don't do enough brushstroke.
I do. I mean, I do quite a bit on my own just because I like it. And there's a glide. I like the glide. For sure. All right. Anything fun happening with the bike for your training this week? Staying on those rollers?
I'm just doing the rollers occasionally. I don't even do the rollers that much. I've been doing mostly running. I'm running well.
That's good.
Not surprising. I haven't run any. Well rested.
There you go.
Fitness is, you carry a lot of that fitness over from the biking I did till I started picking up running. I'm doing well. I'm running fast, and I'm curious to see what happens when we start getting to some faster and faster intervals to see how it goes. But my just easy pace is getting much faster. I'm able to, the night I was doing 930, like 130 heart rate, which is 135 heart rate, which is pretty strong. That's where I really want to be.
I bought, invested just with all the COVID stuff, and just wanted to, my heart rate with the wrist base is just not accurate. So I bought the Garmin Swim, the triathlon heart rate monitor. I've got that when I swim, and it is much more accurate.
Yeah, the wrist base.
My heart rate doesn't go bonkers anymore. Like, yeah, neither,
when the heart rate loses its thing, it goes off the rails.
Yeah,
it does okay when it can hold, but when it loses whatever that, it just goes haywire, and it's completely useless.
Well, and just with everything with COVID and stuff, and I wanted to be sure that my heart rate was doing what it was supposed to be doing. I need to work on it. It's still too high, but that's okay. So it was interesting. When you swim in it, you can't see the data until you're done, and then it downloads it to the watch. Heart rate got up to 161 swimming, average 130. So that's
pretty seems high for swimming.
Not for me.
I assume it's probably something to do with the oxygen deprivation that occurs in swimming.
Probably. I need to actually stop and take my heart rate, you know, kind of compare it to what the
chest does. Yeah, you could do that, I guess. I just don't care enough.
Just every once in a while, just to see how accurate it is. I mean, that's the only way you're going to be able to.
Yeah.
In the water.
Yeah. Unless you're just kind of used to what your heart rate is at different levels of intensity.
Yeah, water's weird, though. It does.
The biggest problem with doing it in the water, you don't generally have sets long enough to elevate a heart rate and keep it at a certain rate. If I'm doing hundreds, you're looking at like a 130 up effort, which isn't really enough to get your heart rate up to the level of effort you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, think about doing like 1 minute intervals. I mean, you don't really running. You slowly get to where you probably are by the end of, say, six or seven of them, maybe. But for the most part, you're just not swimming long enough. I don't do a ton of long sets. You have to do like 5-6 minute sets to really get a good feel for your heart rate swimming. I would think. Like the Irish swim is good for it. I can't imagine just a normal practice would have a lot of.
I'm sure like you just would have a lot of variation. For the Irish swim, I don't know if I did, but I stopped a lot.
Because it takes me a while to get my heart rate elevated whenever I do anything. If I'm doing, even when I'm doing like hard intervals, it's usually the second or third interval before my heart rate gets up to that level where you're at that threshold. When I'm doing my 10K pacing stuff up near threshold, it's usually not until that third interval of like 4 or 5 minutes before my heart rate really gets up there, second or third interval. It's kind of interesting.
Looks like my heart rate stayed pretty consistent during the 1 hour. I did wear it that average 145, high 161. Apparently 161's top when I'm swimming. That's cool.
That happens.
But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of my goals is to kind of get that heart rate down, even though, well, I mean, I'm aging, and so that's not going to help, but.
No. We're at the time where, we're at the time of the year where you get to play around with stuff.
Yeah.
I'm out, instead of biking yesterday, I ended up going sledding with my son.
Yeah.
I probably instead got biking, just as much of a workout.
Cross-country skiing.
I got just as much workout. Probably.
Oh, I bet you did.
Carrying, walking around the snow and carrying a sled up and down a hill as I would have ever gotten from biking, especially on the rollers where you're not going that hard.
Yeah, and a whole lot more fun with it.
Yeah, so this is the time of the year to do stuff like that and just have fun with it and not get too carried away with the seriousness of every data, of the day-to-day data and stuff, other than
I agree.
Complaining about how you go the same distance every year in the Irish one.
We'll have to make that a every 6 month event for you, Brian.
No, not at all. I'm okay. I'm okay to wait till next February.
Okay with that. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We appreciate it. If you're looking for a coach, go to go3sport.com and we'll talk to you next week.